Hey guys.
Hi Phil. Hi Jim.
Hi guys.
You're going home today, Gemma?
I am going home today. It's a shame.
We recorded some good podcasts with you.
Yeah.
Just for our listeners, Jim has changed seats from your normal place.
Yeah. So
she's come over to my side of the couch. For her own words, this was the cool side of the couch.
I mean, you've paraphrased what I've said. That isn't exactly what I said. But I mean, you take it. If that's the win in life that you want, then that is it.
I feel like I've won. That you're on the cool side of the couch. And we've got Jousy on the other side, from the cool side.
I've also got more room. Which is a bit like when you get to sleep in bed on your own, when you're not with the wife. You've got more room. It's great.
Yeah. You need, in fairness, you do need more room.
I do, mate.
Training's not going well, have they, Dad?
It's going all right. It's better than it was.
Okay.
So what are you trying to say, mate? I'm getting a little bit bigger or what? If I was sensitive.
So we're talking, or this podcast, we're talking about fascia.
And in particular?
Well, I've sort of on purpose being a little bit vague to... I know you've prepared a good introduction for us on where we're going. And
don't talk it up, mate. Fascia and pressure on me.
And such things. So I've been given the job of introductions. So I've done an introduction, and now I think you should tell our good friends out there what we're talking about in relation to fascia. What is fascia, etc.
Because I've obviously been in the industry for over kind of 10 years now, and when I got into the industry, the foam rollers were in use and are still in use, and this is all to do with self-myofascial release. So we're just going to tell people what fascia is first, and then we're going to have a discussion on self-myofascial release, and we're going to have a discussion on myofascial release from a therapist point of view as well. Them actually doing hands-on treatment, what are the differences, and all these kind of things. So basically, fascia is the connective tissue that surrounds pretty much everything within the body. So there's a layer of fascia underneath the skin, attaching the skin to the muscles. There's then a layer of fascia surrounding the compartments of muscles, the groups of muscles within different areas of the body. Then there's fascia surrounding each and every individual muscle. And then there's fascia that surrounds every single cell. So myofascial release is soft tissue techniques that are supposed to affect and change any restrictions that are within the fascia that is potentially causing a loss of range of motion or pain, etc. And then we've got self-myofascial release, which are DIY tools to help you do it yourself. And back in the day, it used to be a foam roller that was entirely made of foam. This has now developed over the years to become more like it's definitely harder and more robust.
More like a torture device.
Yeah. Like some drainage pipe, basically, with a little bit of cushioning around it. And it's even progressed on now to hockey balls and lacrosse balls. And what's the new tool? Now even using, if you're in the gym environment, using a barbell to smash your myofascia, in the words of people that endorse it. And this is now, barbell has been made smaller to allow you to carry it around in your bag. But anyway, so they're the devices. Now we're going to get into, this evolved from the last podcast on pain, and we were talking about pressure. So we're going to go with self-myofascial release first and what putting pressure on the body does from a sensory perspective. So when we lie down on our foam roller, choose your Whether you want to go for the choose a type, choose a soft one, choose the hard one. What does that do to the body, guys?
After you, Phil.
Thank you, Jim. I think the distinction that's important is, you've said it yourself, there is a tremendous distinction between professional release and self-release.
Yes, he said self-release, guys.
And I think we do need to take them as two topics. I mean, it's one podcast, but it's two topics.
Yeah.
So I think there's a distinction to make now. When we talk now, we're talking very much about the people doing this to themselves, yeah. Non-specifically, non-professionally, versus the therapist. I mean, so we're starting very much with a self fascial release.
Yeah.
The best way, yeah. You are trying to adapt or change the state of the tissue is ultimately it. You're taking an external object, you are using the external object to try and create or stimulate an internal change. The thing that I think that the title worries me more than anything. And I mean, this is actually from both professional release and when we're doing it with ourselves. You can't differentiate between fascia and muscle. You can't push on a leg or a muscle there and say, I'm now affecting the fascia or I'm now affecting the muscle. You can't differentiate between them, and from an anatomical standpoint, fascia is intertwined in between everything. And the argument for and against is the same, that fascia is intertwined with everything, therefore it is linked all over the body, so therefore when you affect one part, you affect another part. We can't sort of argue with that, that it is linked, but so is the body. If you see what I mean, so is everything has a fascial casing, as you have described, and so I've not met, and I will not meet a therapist who is good enough with their hands to be able to affect fascia without affecting muscle, and or vice versa. So the first thing we need to dispel and we need to talk about is you are not doing a fascial release. You are not doing a muscle release. What you're doing is you're trying to affect the internal state, be it chemically or structurally, by applying pressure to that area. And I think that's, for me, the biggest misconception with calling it fascial release, or in the massage therapy world, calling it trigger point release. I mean, I'm not saying you're only affecting muscle, but to say you are... I mean, using the foam roller on the outside of the leg, for example, you are trying to affect something on the outside of the leg. We'll go on to later if that's beneficial or not, but you're not trying to affect something in the foot or the back. And I could understand it more, and I think some of the original texts in fascia were wonderfully written. And the fact that the structure of the body and the fact that we are interlinked and that we rely on one area for other areas is important. I mean, the definition there, that fascial release for structural balance, it makes sense that muscles and the casings of muscles have pliability and can move. The point is, you can't affect fascia without affecting muscles, or muscles without fascia, because they're one and the same. They're not the same thing, but they're in the same place.
We're touching the body, so we're affecting everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So what you're... More of the problem is the title of it, as opposed to the action, or...
Yeah. Well, in some cases.
What about people that say, well, I foam roll on my outside of my leg for 15 minutes a day and it makes me feel better? What would be your response to that person, Jazz?
feels better because of it's actually changed the tissue.
Oh no, that's not what I said.
No. But I'm sorry. But my kind of response. That's the response, isn't it? Like we've come across the what we're running through the theme of our podcast seems to be kind of keep coming through is when we're affecting the body, we're affecting a lot of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now we've put, well, now you're on a foam roller, now you've got hands on somebody, whichever one of this is the common denominator,
mm-hmm.
is you've put, we're doing something and we think we're affecting fascia, but we are also affecting the nervous system.
Yeah.
We are also then affecting the cardiovascular system. We're also affecting then the brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's that whole perception of, well, it makes me feel better. We don't know why. There is no, it's the fascia. Well, it's not. You are potentially giving that, like with massage, sometimes for the people with, like we said, with the psychology of pain, sometimes it's just the emotional cuddle that they need.
Yeah.
That makes them feel better. Like, why do people do a warm-up? It's all, warm-up is a ritual. It's something that people go through because it helps them feel ready for their sport.
Yeah.
And part of what we're gonna talk about is, like, is the self-myofascial release, is that going to be is that the best way to get ready for your sport as well? Which we'll come back to that.
I think I've done a lot of work on this. I mean, you've both been to. I do a dissection lecture where we take the knee of a cow and we dissect the knee of a cow and have a look at what's going on and have a look at, or an elbow of a cow if Jousey orders the wrong end of the cow.
Well, I trusted the butcher, mate. That was the thing. You thought the butcher had not
but
right.
One of the things I love to do in that lecture is to take one of the larger elements of the fascia, around one of the larger, I usually take it from vastus medialis of the cow and take a large open point of fascia and pass it around the group and ask them to rub it. And rub and rub and rub and rub and rub and see if they can alter the state of the fascia. And now we're talking about real life fascia in their hands. Now, what I agree, the fascia isn't alive yet. I agree with that. But I ask them to rub and rub and rub and rub and see if they can alter the state of the fascia. All that happens is the fascia becomes moist. It secretes fluid, thus changing the chemical balance of the fascia. But it doesn't change. It doesn't get longer. It doesn't alter its structure. I know you've both seen it. You've both tried it. You've both experienced it.
Yeah.
It doesn't change. You can rub and rub and rub and rub and rub. The only thing that ever happens is usually, it depends on how many I've got. If it's a smaller group, it goes around the group and everything's fine. The only thing that the two things that happen with it, once it goes around a group of 30 people, is at some point it goes dry because, of course, it's dead.
Yeah.
There's no fluid supply anymore. And the last thing it does is puts a hole in it. You know, at some point someone goes, oops, I just tore it. Just put a hole through it because I rubbed on it so much. At no point, and we're talking many, many, many pieces of fascia I've had in my hands, and I've tried many, many times with many, many students to alter the length of the fascia. It doesn't change. It's a piece of fabric. It's a hard piece of fabric. Its job is to encompass a muscle and protect that muscle and hold that muscle in so that that muscle can work. Its job is not to be pliable.
I think in what you've explained there, there's an important kind of point that will help people to understand possibly one of the changes that they're doing, and it was that the secretion of fluid. So that secretion of fluid, as that tissue's been rubbed, what is that? How is that helping the body?
Well, I think. I mean, logically, let's just drop science. Just look at logic. You've got the fascia that encases a muscle. The job of the fascia is to encase the muscle, to hold it where it needs to be, to protect it, to give it just a very small protective layer against the world, if you like. It just encases it. Why would you want to affect the state of that, and why would you want to make that longer? Why would you want to make that floppy, if you like, or wobbly? Because its job is to hold muscles together, to hold fibers together. And as you break down, if you go down the chain of muscles from global muscle down to muscle fiber, at every single bundle on the way down has an encasement of fascia holding it in. It seems, when you look at it, and I don't necessarily believe that things are done by random, or they are done by random, that's evolution, but the reason it's still there is because it encases everything. It makes logical sense that everything has a case and is held nicely in its place, so it doesn't end up as a total mess. It is connected. I'm not disagreeing with people that fascia isn't connected throughout the body, but whether you can alter the state of it, and why would you want to alter the state of something that is actually there to hold everything in place and put a nice... They're shelves. I've got this huge bunk of a huge pile of paper sitting on my desk. I take some shelves and I put them all on the shelves, and it looks neat and tidy. And the shelves hold all the papers together, so I know where everything is. That's fascia.
Yeah.
So to try and play a bit of devil's advocate, what about people that... People are going to be listening to this and say, yeah, okay, so we're not affecting fascia. Are we affecting anything else? And like Jazzy alluded to, said, yes, we're affecting the neurological tissues, we're affecting the cardiovascular tissues. But why does that make them feel like they have less muscle soreness after they train? What can we say?
But I mean, just sit there and push into your leg. You increase blood flow to the area.
Yeah.
Increase blood flow, you increase mobility.
So the argument is, if you're doing that, why should we not do it?
Why shouldn't we do myofascial release?
Yeah, if that's what we're, I mean...
Because there's more ways to increase blood flow.
Yeah, good. No,
or there's better ways to increase blood flow.
Yeah, more and better way.
So that's what we're trying to get.
I mean, you're not affecting the length of the fascia. You're not changing the length of the fascia. So we take that out to one side, and say we've tried it enough times, and there's no reason for us to... We're not trying to prove anyone wrong or do anything. There's no reason for it. I want the best for my athletes. If I thought it was good for my athletes, I'd have my athletes on it. I'm not biased. I want to win things. Simple as that.
Yeah.
You know. So I've got 20 hours a week of training with my athletes. I need to find the best use of those 20 hours.
Yeah.
If
that was the most effective way of doing it.
Don't worry, they'd be doing it. They'd be laying on foam rolls and everyone would be doing it. The point is, I know I'm not going to affect the length of the fascia. I know I'm going to create some form of trauma in the muscle. I might want that. We'll come on to that in a minute. I might want some trauma. I might want some muscular release. That might be something that a good side. We'll come to that. And then if we're talking about increased capillarization and we're warming up, well, I can just ask them to do 5 squats or walk up and down the stairs or get on a bike. Get moving. So for that respect, there's no reason to use it for warm up. It's not making fascia longer. I don't see why you'd use it in a warm up.
Yeah, no, I agree. But so something like what you just said, if you're going to go and do a set of squats, or if you're going to go and do like a run, an active warm-up where your feet are on the floor, you're fighting against gravity, you're using your cardiovascular system, you're mimicking normal movement so that the neural pathways are warming up's the wrong word, but primed, yeah, is a good word. That is more efficient and more effective than lying on a foam roller.
Because it's sports.
Yeah.
Well, it's that thing as well, like I said, people say, oh, well, I felt sore before training, so I got on it, and it took my soreness away. I'd say you would get the same effect if you just started moving and did 50 squats.
Exactly.
Like, that pain will go.
Yeah.
Because as we... Yeah.
And it's more beneficial for you.
Exactly.
Because you're doing the movement that you intend to probably do
when
you're going to go and do your squats.
I mean, the other thing with, like, what we're saying, the differentiation between therapy, treatment, like, hands-on of an expert. Well, expert, we've talked about that. Someone that's experienced that it's their career versus you doing it yourself, is at least the therapist knows what they're doing.
And where they are.
And where they are.
Yeah.
And is that, do they want to release that area? Because sometimes that thing that you think you feel is tight is not necessarily the...
We have this all the time, don't
the
we?
The right area.
Yeah. People, and my, myself included, I'll say things like, my hips feel tight. I know for a fact my hips are not tight, but they're the bit that's holding, in the simplistic terms, holding on to me and give me some stability. When I then try, or if anyone then tries to release them off, yeah, I'm going to feel a little bit more comfortable potentially for a short period of time, but I don't have my, again, say symbolizing it, but I don't have my safety network to hold me together then, so yeah. I'm more at risk of injuring myself.
You're letting the beast out of the cage.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that you feel is tight is tight for a reason.
Yeah, we want it there,
I mean,
for the moment.
The thing that you feel is tight is probably the thing that's holding everything together for you. Possibly the worst thing you can do to that thing is to say to it, neurologically desensitize it. And now, so ultimately now, as I'm talking, I held it a little bit back earlier on, talking about the chemical state and changing the internal state. But what we are changing then by putting pressure on the muscle is we are desensitizing the neurological drive to that muscle. So ultimately what that means is the brain is sending a message, or actually we know now it doesn't even need to go via the brain, it can go via the spinal cord and back out. There's no need for a sort of direct route up to the brain. We're sending a message out to the muscle to say either contract harder or contract less hard.
Yeah.
And so we're altering the neurological stimulus to the muscle when we put pressure on it. And if we're putting pressure on the muscle, we're saying... We're desensitizing the neurological drive to potentially the tight muscle. That tight muscle is probably the muscle that's keeping you from being injured at the moment. It's probably the muscle that's stopping you falling over. And so what happens is foam rolling or releasing, self-releasing becomes addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes that, you know, for me the classic example is just when you start to shave. The first time you shave, you think it's the coolest thing in the world and, oh, I'm a man. And then... you sort of, it goes a month and it's a bit windy outside, so you didn't need to shave for a month. And then you, in a month's time, you shave again, and then suddenly it's 3 weeks, and then suddenly it's 2 weeks, and suddenly it's, oh my God, I need to shave every single day. And that is exactly what happens with a foam roller, is that you just become dependent and reliant on it, because what happens is you desensitize neurological drive, then you get up and train and create an enormous demand on the nervous system. The nervous system goes, hang on a minute, you've just told me, don't work, desensitize, don't send signals to that muscle. And then I get up and I say, send a load of messages, I need help because it's the only thing holding me together. And the body goes, hang on a minute, what is it you want here? Do you want me to desensitize the muscle or do you want me to use the muscle? It's the opposites of foam rolling would be, why don't we try and increase neurological drive to the muscles that aren't contributing to the movement? Yeah. That's what a warm-up should be. You know, that's why if you ever go into a CrossFit box that Jousy's been anywhere near, people are dancing all around in their warm-ups. And, you know, the term is sort of nicely been coined as the Jousy shapes or the Jousy dance moves. But you walk around and you see Jousy's athletes warming up and they've got all sorts of funky moves, and because what he's trying to do, that is his foam rolling, he's trying to send extra neurological drive to muscles that aren't contributing, so that when we go and train, the body says, I've got my go-to man, he's not been desensitized, and guess what's happened? I've got three or four others that want to help me here. Or that feels easy today at that weight, rather than the other side of things where the body's just in this conflict of, what's going on here? What are you trying to do to me?
Yeah, it's pretty cool how that, like that explanation there, Isaac Newton just had it absolutely on point for each and every action.
Which is surprising.
Is an equal and opposite reaction.
He knew what he was talking about, didn't he?
He's not daft.
No. He had his head in check, didn't he?
He did.
But yeah, that's a cool thing. For all of that effort that you put in, now it's giving you the opposite all the way back again. And yeah, you're addicted to the foam roller.
You end up addicted to it. Yeah.
But that pain thing, like, I think we should go onto the pressure,
yeah.
Like what we talked about in the last thing with pain. Like people saying that you shouldn't feel pain when you lie down or when you roll well, let's take it to this advanced thing now with the barbell.
Yeah.
Like people rolling a thing and saying, this shouldn't hurt, rolling a metal barbell down your leg. Like we've just talked about the nervous system.
Yeah. And how pressure, and there's a certain threshold for pressure, isn't there? So we have receptors within our body that will perceive pressure or movement, etc. So if I press on my arm, to a certain point, it's just going to feel like pressure, which is fine. But after a certain point, there's a threshold in which chemicals change and they are released in a different way. And that sparks off a painful response. So if you put a bar on your, I've seen it done on like your pec insertion, so up by your shoulder. If you put a bar here and put pressure on, I don't know anybody that that wouldn't be uncomfortable for. But those people don't necessarily have a problem in that area that they need to be smashing a muscle.
Isn't it interesting now that all the areas you should release are the areas that are the most sensitive areas in the body? Yeah. And it's so easy to sell a concept, isn't it, when you say, well, it hurts out there, so you need it. And everyone says, oh, yeah, well, it hurts loads, so I must need it. But it hurts because you shouldn't be pressing on it. You know, that's why it hurts, because you shouldn't be pushing on it.
So what happens when, well, I say I don't do it anymore, but people report that they feel less sore? Is that just the desensitization to it? How much change is that actually affecting? So why do people then start to feel less over time, less pain over time when they roll on it? The need increases. So the need and like, oh, I feel like I need to roll, like which is what we said.
Yeah.
But how come when they lie on, it's not as painful as it was before? Is it?
Is it because we've desensitized it?
Yeah, is it the change in, was it the change in, I mean, we're probably, like I say, we're affecting everything, so it's probably...
It's everything, I'm answering isn't it? My yeah, own you're question, answering your own question, it's everything.
Yeah, so then people go, oh, well, surely that's a good thing. Yeah. Like, so...
But is it a good thing?
Well, yeah.
Because, like we've said before, is it a good thing? I guess that...
I'm just trying to be devil's advocate.
No, I understand.
I think everyone knows, that knows me, I'm not a huge fan.
No, and I'm not either. I don't think it. Yeah. I think it. There's so much more you could be doing that is significantly better rather than wasting your time.
Yeah.
But I will have people that we do certain types of releases on.
Yeah.
And so people will be listening that we treat and say, well, hang on a minute. You've definitely dug your thumb into my glutes when it was painful.
Yeah.
And.
I've used a cricket ball.
Yeah. I mean, and I. Yeah. That's
on a
it.
Glute. I have used a cricket ball on a glute, and I do have some. But I'll use. I mean, sorry, Jim, but I'll use. I've got two answers for you.
Well, I'll have one, and then the other. Go for it.
The first one is you've got an acute side of things.
Yes.
And you've got. I've got an athlete in a race with pain, and I've got some problems, and I haven't got time to affect them directly.
Right there.
Right there. Right now, or yeah. I have an athlete phone me from Argentina. In a race and say, my knee hurts, what do I do? Firstly, probably need to find a new coach because it's my fault your knee hurts because of my conditioning, because there's no such thing as an accidental injury.
Nope.
They're all programming based, so if you've got pain and everything, you need to talk to your coach.
Yep.
So anyway, that's a side point. We'll get to that on another day, I'd imagine. So for me, now, what do I do quickly? I know this guy has tightness when he rides a bike. I know his hips, his glutes become very stiff, very tight. It changes the feet femoral angle, the leg bone, the top bone angle on the bike, and it takes his knee outwards mm-hmm. when he rides his bike. And I know that position of being out causes his knee pain. It's not ideal, but the best thing he could do at that point is to just relieve a little bit of the tension in the glute to stop his knee coming out on the bike.
As a quick fix,
yeah. Sit on a cricket ball. I accept, however, I am desensitizing his ability to produce power on the bike. So I'm making a decision. I'm taking 10 watts away from him, which is a lot when you're racing at the top level, versus, or do I say, I'm sorry, mate, you've got the knee pain, just carry on and we'll fix it when you get home. My first inclination would be, look, carry on. Rings me the next day, look, I'm going to drop out if you carry on this knee pain. Okay, sit on a cricket ball. So that's the acute side of things. The chronic side of things when we release is, I think where we go for, I always try to look at bone motions. what would I like the bone to be going? What bone motion would I like the bone? What's the most optimal motion in relation to gravity, etc., when someone is producing a sporting motion? And if that bone is doing the opposite or not doing it as much as I would like to do it, then I know the muscular reaction isn't going to be the same. Yeah. So what I can do in that respect is say, okay, I'm not releasing the muscle because I want the muscle to have less tension. I'm releasing the muscle to allow the bone to do what it should be doing, thus allowing the musculature that should be loading in that time and should be working that time to work efficiently and effectively.
So to explain it really simply, if you had somebody that was squatting and for some reason you couldn't get them to recruit their glutes as well as you'd like them to do because of a muscle being tight. So, yeah. So a muscle's tight and so you're seeing a patterning that you don't particularly want to see. You would potentially release, we'll use that word, you would potentially release in motion or while they were doing something or in a certain position just so you could get recruitment of the muscle you actually want to work. So turn that one off for a minute, not turn it off. I'm really being really simplistic about it.
But that's fine.
It off for a minute so that other one can do his job and then they can both work together.
I mean, you used the squat. The classic example is under no circumstance in the squat would you ever want the knees to go outwards. And we see it a lot because people are poorly coached or have bad conditioning in the hips. So if I didn't see a slight, and I'm not talking about ducking inwards at great speed, but I didn't see a slight inward motion of the knees at the squat, I might release some kind of muscles that are holding the knees out to help my athlete
be able to load
be more efficient, load their glutes and use their glutes during the squat instead of having the knees outwards and not using the glutes.
And I imagine we'll potentially, what's the right word? Perk up the ears of a few listeners with regards to the in and out knees, but I'm sure.
Yeah, because guys,
there's not much of a discussion
there. No, exactly, but there still is within the world, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, people are still focusing on isolated muscle motions rather than integrated functional muscle motions, but we can go there
maybe
again.
Maybe that's another.
So summaries. You know, summaries, we are saying that we do use releases at the right times. We consensus that we're sort of against people doing it themselves.
Yeah,
we're
absolutely
against rolling things up and down our legs, hoping for a change.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to promote is good understanding and function of that moment. Yeah. I think maybe we can summarize, say it goes back to what we do. We need to analyse with people who probably understand their sports better than we do, what is ideal for this sport? How do we overcome the object in front of us, whether that be weight, mountains, forests, water, whatever it is, sport is about overcoming what's in front of us. And what is the best technical element of coming through that? And where is my athlete now? And how do I then take them through that and recruit the right muscles and do everything else like that? That's what we're saying.
Yes.
Is the right way to do it.
Yeah.
So because a lot of it can sound like we're saying don't foam roll, don't release, and sort of say, okay, so what should I do? Well, you should just train. You know, you should just be training.
Get warm
and just be training and enjoying it and and then if you need to go to the next level, then that is unfortunately an analysis either someone who's trained and understands the mechanics of your sport, or sit down yourself, which is, I mean, in our words, very enjoyable, figure out what you should be doing, video yourself and see what you are doing and see what you need to work on. And when you work on that, what tends to happen in sports is the right technique is usually the safest. It's usually been developed that the right technique is the strongest position for your body. And the strongest position for your body is the safest position for your body. So the chances of injury and having to have tight muscles and release things diminish immensely when we're actually in the right positions for our sport. So the focus and the time and all those hours we use warming up could be just used on drilling and doing and learning the correct technique so that we didn't end up there. Of course, then you would have there is just that. I've got the right technique and I've overloaded a muscle to the point that it hurts the next day. Yeah, well done.
That's okay.
You've trained well.
Yeah.
Good work.
I'm happy with that.
We're talking about training systems and energy systems and recovery systems, and maybe then we need to look at program adaption to say, should you feel that hard? Should you have done that much? maybe you should have done. That's fine if that's a part of your overloading or part of that now.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's bad. That doesn't mean you should release. And if you can't train effectively today because of what you did yesterday, you trained too hard today. Or, again, your coach needs a talking to. Because you shouldn't feel like that every day unless you're going through a phase where you should feel like that every day. You know, so, yeah. So for me, that's the summary with it, is that shouldn't be necessary if programming's right.
And that's the toughest bit.
Or the enjoyable
fun bit.
Part.
It is the fun bit.
To be honest, yeah.
And it's also the interesting part.
Yeah. Good. Coffee time.
Good discussion.
It's fun, isn't it?
Oh, it's better than writing a blog.
Questions, if you have any. We're starting to get some really nice feedback on our podcasts, and some really good, positive questions are coming in about things. And we're actually gonna do a podcast just answering questions with the ones we've had in from the listeners. So we'll do that. Keep them coming in. We appreciate your feedback. And Gemma has a secret, actually. Gemma is the only member of the Shot in the Dark cast that doesn't drink Shot in the Dark.
No. Not because it's not wonderful, I'm sure, but I don't drink any coffee.
So Gemma has said when one of our podcasts reached 500 listeners...
Well, I think Phil said it and I agreed.
One of our podcasts reached 500 listeners, she'll drink two shots of... espresso.
One shot.
Oh, was it one?
Yeah.
So you see my negotiation skills there?
Nope, that was not negotiation.
If I'd have said one, you would have discussed it. Because I said two, you agree to one. So share it with your friends if you would be so kind, so we can have Gemma drinking espresso. Good. Have a nice day, guys. Train well.